Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Friday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, Joel Elkanen, Dennis Dick with you. This morning, I'm making it through my first week back at the home office. So again, I apologize for any and all gremlins. They're pretty much all my fault. Okay, as far as today's show, got a really big one for you today. We've got buy the dip happening overnight. We've got earnings. We've got electric vehicle updates. We've got a lot going on the news front. We've got the Mnuchin fighting with the Fed. We've got California going back into lockdown. A lot of news here. I'm really excited, though, for the end of our show. Jason Raznick will join us, and I think he's going to be joined by Josh Brown. You probably know Josh Brown. He's runs the popular blog, The Reform Broker. He's the CEO of Ritholtz Wealth Management. He's on CNBC very frequently. I think I've heard that Josh is going to join us today for the last few minutes of the show, so it'll be Jason and Josh. But before we get to them, we got a lot to get to, as I mentioned, a lot of news on our radar. Before I throw it to Joel, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. And now, Joel, tell us, how are we doing here overnight?
Buy the dip, Spencer. And this dip, we'll discuss it more in detail with Triple D when he comes on. Pre-market low, 35.44. We hit that overnight. We came all the way back and kissed yesterday's high, 82.75. 82.50 stands as the high of the session. Crude, that took a little dip, but buy the dip in that as well. Crude up 12 cents at 42.02. Gold trying to get some green back this week, up 420 at 1865.70. Silver, that's in the green too, by almost 20 cents at 24.25. And Bitcoin, I guess to buy the dip into the middle 1700 handle would have worked, up $170 at 18,265. Triple D, I know things were a little bit slow this week, but last night you must have had some fireworks between 4:30 and 6, at least looking at the SPY and the S&Ps.
Buy the dip wins again. I mean, it doesn't matter the headline. It doesn't matter the fear of the virus. Buy the dip. We fall 35 S&P points overnight, and we get them all back, Joel. I mean, this is just the way this market works. Stocks only go up. I'm starting to really believe it. I'm starting to believe it that stocks only go up. I mean, it looked ugly for the reopening stocks last night. Multiple headlines, Spencer, if you want to give those to us. One breaking at 4:30, another bad one from California at about 5:15. And they started slamming the reopening stocks, and that's what brought the S&P down 33 points, I believe, at the low.
Yep.
And we've come all the way back. So what were those two headlines?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of already mentioned them here, but California is going back into essentially they're reimposing various lockdowns, which, again, not a surprise. It's been happening all over the country. It started with Illinois as far back as like 2 weeks ago, I think, or even more, but we've seen them across the country. California, the latest domino to fall in the re-lockdown trend. And then what I thought was more interesting was this headline out at 4:30 that Steve Mnuchin and the Department of Treasury are basically ending, they're allowing a number of lending programs to expire at the end of the year, in direct contrast with what Jerome Powell has previously and other Fed governors have said. They've argued that these lending programs, even though they're not that widely used, the existence of them is critical, and they've argued that these lending programs need to be extended. Mnuchin is ending them at the end of the year. Is it the biggest deal in the world? Probably not, because as I forget who said it, someone at the Fed said, we can always just restart the programs, which is true, but the fact that they're essentially ending one or several of the emergency backstops that the Fed put in there back in March and April, I thought that was more interesting to me than California, which wasn't a surprise, right? But this was a surprise to me. So again, you got California going back into lockdown. You've got the Treasury Department ending a number of lending programs that their usefulness was their existence, right? So whether or not they were used is almost irrelevant, because the fact that they were there is the vote of confidence that the market needed. So lending programs ending, some of them, and that's what caught my eye. Those two things are our drivers overnight, I think.
Okay, two things to this and why we bounce back is, one, this market doesn't really care about lockdowns right now because we're looking ahead at the vaccine. It's like, okay, well, if we have to go through a 30-day or, you know, 2-month lockdown, we've got the vaccine coming. So the light is shining brightly at the end of the tunnel. And that is what the market is looking at. And that's why the reopening stocks, every time they sell off a little bit, money managers are scooping them up because they're seeing that light at the end of the tunnel. It's why I was scooping up reopening stocks on that other dip. I've sold a lot of them, kept some NCLH, but I'm thinking about rebuying and reloading in some of these too, because I do see the light at the end of the tunnel too. Secondly, even though, you know, the Fed might, you know, slow down the printing press indirectly here, we know the Fed's got this market's back. Maybe it's going to be different when Biden gets in, but still, you still got the Fed and you're still going to probably have the same chairman there. And we know every time the market dips significantly, the Fed will pull out some bullets and, you know, to do whatever they can to prop the market back up. So, and then the third thing is, where do you go? I mean, interest rates are so low. So where do you go, you know, with your money? So that's always been the problem for years, which is what continues to obviously inflate stocks to valuations we haven't seen for a long time. So moral of the story, buy the dip. I mean, I think you continue to do it. And I think you're doing it now on reopening stocks, which I was not doing before. I was only buying the dip on tech stocks. I'm now doing it on the reopening stocks because, you know what? I see the light at the end of the tunnel too.
Yeah, that's a just peculiar timing on that Fed announcement, right? Or, you know, going into the end of the year. I think another thing that you didn't mention, Spencer, and I don't know exactly what time this came out, but, you know, we all know the election's not over, right? And Trump made a pretty bold move yesterday to try and block the Wayne County vote, and a couple Republican senators. So do you know what time that came out, Spencer? Because I think
yes, that was yesterday pre-market.
30 day.
Yeah, that was yesterday morning. The Michigan Wayne County situation is not over yet.
Correct.
But that's been going back and forth really since Tuesday. But the news that you're referring to, the second reversal, came yesterday early morning or late Wednesday night. So that was out there already.
Yeah. Okay. So the only reason I'm saying that is that the market likes certainty. And, yeah, you know, with these kind of things going on,
I completely disagree. There's no way they're reversing this now. I think the election is over. There's, you know, and you can have Giuliani saying that there's still a path to victory all you want and sweating while he says it. But I mean, this is over. So I think the market has priced it to be over. This is why the dips keep getting bought, is, in my opinion, is this market doesn't like uncertainty, and it's pretty much got the certainty that Biden is going forward. I don't totally get it, because I think Biden is not going to be as friendly to Wall Street. So I don't totally get, you know, why we would rally significantly. I get why solar would rally, and I get why, you know, maybe some of your pot stocks in the US would rally, but I don't totally understand why a market would rally on a certainty of a Biden victory, but it just wants certainty. I just think it, you know, we're the market's comfortable, and it's sick to a certain extent, but it's comfortable with 1,000 people dying a day. It's probably comfortable if we go up to 2,000 people dying a day, and it's comfortable because it thinks the vaccine's coming out. And I think that you're coming into seasonality, November, December. I don't want to be short stocks. I think you're going to get some ugly headlines like we did last night. We had an ugly, you know, headline from California last night, the other headline that Spencer was talking about. And what happens? You know, the market proves once again that it doesn't care. We sell off 33 handles of people who are selling it on the headline saying, oh, this is going to hit the market, last night, are down significant amounts of money here this morning because we come right back. And I just think with everything the way it's been, what derails this market from moving up and making new all-time highs when you've got the best month for the market coming up in December? You know, is it going to be the fact that we're going to lock down during, you know, Christmas season? I mean, that's kind of a scary thought, but there's been scary thoughts all over the place. The market just shrugs it off. So I'm not fighting the tape. I mean, I could, you know, paint you a very bearish thesis here where a lot of people are going to die,
but
the market
work.
Doesn't care. It doesn't work. So I'm just going with the flow. I'm pretty much fully invested to where I want to be.
Yep.
And I keep buying the Momo names, you know, on dips. And and it's been working. Like Nikola, you know, the only EV stock that hadn't win. I was like, do I like Nikola long term? No, but I mean, doesn't matter. It's an EV stock that hadn't gone yet, and they're all going. So, and you know, I'm up 20% in 2 days because just because it's an EV stock. And I'm not selling it yet because I think the EV party is still continuing. I mean, these things have gone crazy again.
Spencer, you want to go with that?
Nikola was interesting. I was surprised to see it trade the way it did yesterday, only because Mary Barra was speaking at the Barclays Auto Conference, right? And she gave a whole bunch of updates about electric vehicles, about the batteries, right? Talk a lot about the batteries. Didn't say a thing about Nikola. Not one mention of Nikola. When she was, I don't know how long she spoke for, but you would think. Yeah. You would think if she's giving an investor update about electric vehicles that she would, if it was going well, she would have mentioned them. Would she have not? So I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. I have no insight, but I just thought that was odd.
Good point.
And it was even odder that the stock closed up yesterday.
It's all of a sudden got the squeeze going on and people are remembering it. It was forgotten. And now people are remembering it and they're like, oh, this is an EV play. It's the only reason I bought it. What a stupid reason to buy a stock. You know, let's just stop and think about this. This is how, you know, dumb, you know, this market is. I mean, I'm looking at it and I was like, what EV play hasn't gone? Because they've all rocket ships. I was like, I'm looking at Nikola there. I was like, Nikola hasn't gone. And literally 2 hours later, and then I get I got lucked out with the headline there. But I mean, this is just the market. It's like, okay, what hasn't gone? Let's go look. Oh, this hasn't gone. It's probably going to go. Lo and behold, it goes. I mean, it's just ridiculously simple right now. The market has been simple here for a while. It's very like, it can't really think beyond a headline. It can't really think beyond, you know, like now it's just vaccine focused. It's like, it cannot stop looking at the vaccine. It's got blinders on to people dying, to California locking down, Chicago locking down. To, you know, all the other problems, got the blinders on, it's just looking at the vaccine. I mean, and that's, you know, how do you argue with it? I mean, the market is the market, and you've got to go with the flow, and you have to understand in this market, this is for the last 21 years I've traded, you can have the best thesis in the world, and maybe you're right, but if the market deems you wrong, you lose money. So you just got to go with the flow. And the flow is buy the dip, and the flow has now moved to buy the dip on the reopening stocks. We saw it with Macy's yesterday. What did we say on the show? I would not be short Macy's. I said, part of me wants to buy it, but I didn't have the guts to do it. And look what happens. By the end of the day, Macy's, all of a sudden, green again. Full disclosure, I'm now long Macy's. But and that's just in the short-term trading account. So just
want you got to get that. Yeah, two highs. You got to get through 9.25. Wednesday's high 9.26, and then yesterday's high 9.24. So keep an eye on that. And just for you NKLA traders out there, stopped at a good area yesterday. I think this 2730 area, that was a 2740 was your high last month. You hit it again yesterday, pulled back. I don't see anything really between that and 30. So, if you're trading that one, man, get that thing 27.5 bid, 28 handle, get a nice move in that. I just wanted to point that out for your NKLA traders.
It's got a rating too today, Spencer. What's the rating on NKLA? Really?
Oh,
obviously you get analysts to chase price here. I mean, they can't.
That's right. Loop Capital initiating with a buy, giving it a $35 price target.
That came out last night. So they're sitting there waiting and they see a move and they're like, okay, now's the time. I mean, they're waiting for momentum to start. The analysts time these ratings. We know Michael Pachter, you know, has talked about, you know, how they do it. You know, they look and they're looking for setups too. They're not just, so they sometimes might even have the report for a few days. They don't just issue it right away. They want to time it correctly too. So because they don't want to, you know, you don't want to be buying when everybody sees. That's why when you see these huge down days, you don't see a lot of analysts upgrades happening at that time because they're like, oh, we got to make sure the market doesn't go for a significant sell-off because that's really going to knock my rating around. It's like these ratings are trades for these analysts, really. So they're going to time them too. And I don't think it's surprising that you see Nikola have a big move and all of a sudden you got an analyst saying, oh, hey, this might start going. I better get out here and, you know, give this a buy rating so, you know, that I can catch this momentum. And that's why when stocks start going, they often continue to go because we talk about analysts chasing price and they do. And, you know, it's a tough job. They have a tough job, but at the same time, Yeah, it's a tough job, but at the same time, they're looking and they're technicians as well, so they're not just all fundamental.
Lester Newman read my mind. What about the Adam Jonas upgrade at Tesla? The day after it was added, it showed some strength and, you know, not as great a day as you thought it was going to have. And then, boom, the next day he comes out with it and pushes it to a new all-time high.
It's an interesting market, Joel. And, you know, to try to logically talk through it, you got to simplify it down to a very low level. Just like I said, blinders are on, looking at the vaccine, reopening stocks are now the play. I think they remain the play here until one of these vaccines comes out. And it's like, oh, you know, if news comes out and Pfizer says, you know, or somebody dies in the trial, or Pfizer all of a sudden says, oh, we found a problem with the vaccine, that would change the blinders. But right now they're looking at Moderna and they're looking at Pfizer and saying, wow, 95%. I mean, we can get through this. I hope it's right. I really do. I want to get through this. I want to go back to normal. And the market wants to go back to normal too. And that's why the market no longer wants to be short stocks like Boeing, no longer wants to be short stocks like Kohl's. Like, Boeing gave you a pullback now. So if you're so inclined, I don't know who's buying the Max, but maybe you're looking years down the road here. You know, Boeing bounced right off that $200 level. So it sets up that now you got a level to lean on. You're not chasing it because it had the big move and the washout from 223. As long as it holds that 199.90 low, you're risking $5 if you're buying it this morning, but, you know, comes in 202, 203, maybe take a shot. You know, it's all about setups and define risk. And now you have a low from yesterday that you can lean on.
Hey, speaking of Pfizer, Pfizer and BioNTech announced this morning that they're going to submit their emergency use authorization today to the FDA for their vaccine. So I guess the plan, according to the release here, I'll read directly from it, which will potentially enable use of the vaccine in high-risk populations in the U.S. by the middle to the end of December 2020. So they're submitting their application today for emergency use, which means best case scenario, in 2 to 3 weeks, people are getting the vaccine.
I think Joel froze here. There's a funny lines from the chat here too, Joel.
Yep, Joel is frozen. Joel is frozen. That's okay. The show must go on here.
Show must go on. We knew this was coming. They said it yesterday that Pfizer was going to apply here today, but the simple market that this is, it's like, oh, Pfizer's applying, so they buy Pfizer up. Well, we knew this was already on the schedule. They said it yesterday that they were going to do it, and its stock goes up anyways. I mean, that's how simple this market. You got to really take it down to like a grade one level. That's how you're going to make money trading this market. It's not diving deep and overthinking it. It's basic thinking. This market thinks very basic right now. It's like, oh, it's applying, stock is up the next day. So if you're buying Pfizer yesterday ahead of the application that you knew they were submitting today, you're making yourself 1.8%. So don't overthink it. This is the type of market that just gives you easy money. And Pfizer would have been easy money overnight too. Wish I would have did it.
Yep. All right, Joel, we obviously lost Joel. He will be back with us whenever he gets back with us. But as we said, the show must go on. Dennis, do you want to go into...
I hope we didn't say something to upset him. Anyways, next.
Can we not go there?
I gotta text him and say, please come back. And he's good.
Can we not go there this time?
No, we won't go there. We're not going there.
All right. Can we go to some earnings here? There are some earnings that I wanted to hit on here. Intuit, Workday, and let's start with Intuit here. They had earnings out last night. Then we'll do Workday next. Intuit beat, very nice beat on their EPS, 94 cents versus a 34. Up, oh, Joel's back. Here we go. Joel, I'll get you. 94 cents versus a 37 cent estimate. Sales of $1.32 versus $1.21 billion. So as I said, a beat and a beat for Intuit for the previous quarter. And for the current quarter, they gave guidance, EPS guidance above estimates as well. And they gave some very positive sales growth guidance. So Intuit, beat, strong guidance. Joel, we're back. You're back.
Yeah, I don't know. Did you send those gremlins over to my house? Because I'm not sure what happened there. But yeah, just talking Intuit, Triple D, did you get down and dirty on it while I readjust my charts?
No, I didn't trade into it. This is a tough chart too. I mean, you caught a few people yesterday. It sold off right hard in the morning, and then they decided to rip really all of tech, you know, started to bounce back after that initial sell off. I mean, Twilio, was weak right off the hop, and then they bought Twilio up 20 points from the lows. You know, obviously into a Twilio, not the same company, but you know, it's all in momentum tech, so it kind of is, at least in this market. INTU, it's hanging out here. It can't really decide if it likes the report or doesn't like the report. It's going to be about rotation. So the individual report isn't going to matter as much as what happens with the rotation after 9:30. Remember, we also have option expiration here today. So you often see on the third Friday of the month some wicked turns in the market. So do we just start piling back into the reopening stocks, or do they get spooked with what happened with California? That's probably to be determined after 9:30 here today. But watch the rotation in the first 10 minutes, because if they start buying those reopening stocks, they will start hitting tech. And, you know, we've seen this very clearly that there's right now an inverse relationship between the reopening and the stay-at-home stocks. Intuit is kind of classified in the stay-at-home category here. So I'm looking at rotation more to try to trade this stock.
Tough chart, too. If you would have asked me in the number, I would have said, hey, people are stuck between, you know, 360 and then that all-time high that was made at what was the all-time high made a few days ago at in the 370?
377.
Yeah. So, but I would just right now, it's still early. It's only down 4 cents. The close is obviously important, but I think if you're trading into it, if you're looking for more upside, you got to take out yesterday's high, 63.39. And I think even if you do, much depends on the rotation, but I just think some people, they're stuck here. So I just don't see us going right back up to 377. So keep an eye on yesterday's high. Now, if you can't take out 63.39, I expect it to roll over and give a little bit back, maybe not get down to yesterday's low, but 363.39, that's my level for Intuit.
What about Workday?
Yep, Workday, same story. Big EPS beat, big sales beat, and good subscription guidance for the fiscal year above estimate. So good report again for Workday.
It's down.
It's tech again. Right now, there's still an overall theme of rotation. Again, think about the blinders. When you're going to buy a tech stock right now, think about the blinders. They're looking at the vaccine. So what does that mean? It means they're not that interested in tech right now. The market is not that interested until that story changes and the vaccine doesn't look as hopeful. And I don't hope that's not going to be the case. But if that happens, then they'll start to just pile back into tech. But right now they got the blinders on and they're looking at the vaccine. And that's not good news for stocks like Workday. So it reverses on a good report for the simple reason there's profit takers in tech here now. So you get that pop back up near the highs where we got to back in August. They're like, I'll take that. You know, I'm getting, you know, right out near the high from August, and they're looking to book profits. So, you know, you get significant pullbacks in tech. There's always buy the dip mentality in tech. So I would say, you know, you get down to 210, probably 215 Workday, probably just gets bought again. But just think about, I don't want to be buying rips on earnings reports right now. You're not going to get the follow through. And the fade trade has worked so well in the last couple of months. So fading all moves, even in the reopening stocks, have been fading moves, and that's been working well. Don't chase. When you're buying them up 16 points on a report, you're probably on the wrong side of the trade. And those people were last night.
A huge area here, which will determine the next direction for Workday. Three lows in a row, and I'm going to call it 1850 right there. That's a triple bottom. Haven't gotten there yet in the pre-market. Someone that has a little interest here at 222, but that's what I would keep an eye on. Three lows in the same area. If you hit it the first time, you make it a bounce. If, in fact, that area doesn't hold, this thing could easily see 210 today. So keep an eye, circle 218.50 for Workday today. And if you get anywhere, you got yesterday's low. You are opening yesterday's low. But if you want a target on the upside, I'm sure a lot of people would like to see that close of 230.80.
I want to just make a quick correction. That Workday guidance was actually a smidge on the light side. Thank you very much, Spinner, for that correction. This is a subject change, but do you want to go to Foot Locker? They reported a few minutes ago. I guess now it was a couple hours ago. But 6:45 this morning, they're out. Foot Locker beat in the third quarter. Their EPS $1.21 for 62 cents. Sales 2.1 versus $1.9 billion. So a very nice beat for Foot Locker in the third quarter. I have not looked at the chart. I have no idea what the stock is doing this morning.
tough stock because it's not a clear-cut reopening play, because Foot Locker had actually been doing okay because people are going outside doing more things. I know they're in stores, but they have an online presence as well. It wasn't as, it's not as clear-cut like a peer like Kohl's, Macy's. So it actually has been performing. So you've got a stock, and you know it's been the leaders to laggards rally too. And Foot Locker has definitely been a leader in the last 3 months. It's went from $25 up to $41. So a lot of good news priced in there. Again, the report was pretty good though. I'd say I don't like the after hours action so far. No. If you're bullish, because it's tried twice to rally and failed both times. So you definitely don't want to see this thing go red. But it's tough. This is a tough call.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get a look at that that after hours or pre-market high at 44.18. Hit that, and then it got up to 44.13 again. Now you're $1.80 off that. So I think you're going to have to pick an intermediate level if you want to sell. This could get to 44, but just the way it looks now, a little bit heavy. I might even set my targets at 43, because you even haven't been – I mean, the high of the move yesterday, which was yesterday, 41.51. So, boom, I'd look at that as potential support and just throw some numbers out there ahead of 44. I don't think it's getting there.
And then also, if you want to do Hibbett.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. How'd that do?
Yeah, I was going to go. That was kind of the only other one, the only retailer. Well, the other earnings report.
You know who liked this stock a long time ago?
Yeah, Spinner already beat you to it. I know. Enlighten us, Joel.
The Reverend.
Yeah, the Rev. Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
He is buying this down like he buys all the Reverend doesn't change his opinion. He goes and he starts buying at 20, it goes to 15, he buys more, and he goes down to 10, he buys even more. He just keeps buying and buying and buying. You know what? It worked in this one. Macro, did it ever work? So Rev, let's get the Rev back on.
I don't know.
Always about issues with Reverend. So okay.
Yeah. There's some SEC things going on there. I'd rather not
come soon. But he was right on Hibbett.
He was laying that right on Legan too. Let's not talk about it.
HIBB, the Q3 adjusted EPS was $1.45. It was 32 cents a year ago. Wow. Sales of 330 million versus 286 million. So beat on that number as well. They gave Q4 EPS guidance. They gave a range of $1 to $1.10 versus a 60 cent estimate. Comps in the high single digit to low double-digit range. Again, that's Q4 guidance there. Q3 comps are 21%. Jeez.
These are all really tough.
This is
trends clearly up, but these are tough charts today. You've been like four in a row. It's like, I don't really want to make a position on any of these. And you don't have to swing at every pitch. You know, even when we're making calls, somebody throws you a ticker, it's like, I pass. I'm going to pass on this one. This one's that curveball, man. Slider. Yeah. You know, it looks like it's going to go in this. This doesn't even look like. This looks like it's just outside. This wasn't even like a slider. This is like pitch. Limber looked like it was even near the strike zone. So I'm not swinging at it.
0-2 count, and they just
not
they
Rob Deere.
Yeah, they tried to get you to go for something outside.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Rob Deere swings at that every single time. The thing's like literally like it's like going to be a wild pitch, and he's swinging at it. So
Rob Deere reference. Who else makes Rob Deere reference? And then
Prince Fielder swung at a lot of stuff too.
Who was the wrestler that we used to do though? Woo. Who was that?
Ric Flair. Come on.
I forgot about him. Yeah, we got to get Ric Flair on.
We got to get Ric Flair on the show. We need to get Mike Tyson on the show, too. Yeah, Mike Tyson's going to have another fight coming up.
Really?
Yeah, he's fighting. I think it's the 28th.
Wow. You went from 56 to basically 30. I don't know. I just would figure your exact 50% retracement, because this thing had a nice haircut coming into the report. I don't know why I went from 55 to 36, but you just got to look at, you know, mid range on there and see if it looks like around a little bit above $45. So figure your 50% retracement there, use that as resistance, but this came off, man, this, I don't know why I got a $55, but here we are working our way back up.
Can we just talk Tesla here for a second?
Because sure.
Always talk Tesla.
It closed just under. It did break 500, but then
the new all-time high.
It couldn't hold it for the close. Here, there was a note that I want to read.
Sure.
To you guys, or just a line. This is from Wedbush this morning, but he was citing Sentiment Trader, which is a great follow on Twitter. If you don't know that account, it's @SentimentTrader. Okay. This is a fun fact about S&P 500 additions and subtractions and whatever. Going back to 1979, they looked at every time the S&P added a new stock to the index. They filtered for the largest ones. What gets interesting is that returns turn south once the stock is actually added to the index, which on average has been around 7 trading days after the announcement. By this time, investors have front-run the index in anticipation of all the passive buying that should flood into the stock. So what they're saying is, going back to 1979, looking at the largest additions to the index, the stock sells off in the week afterwards.
Yeah, we know that. This is a simple, simple trade too. It's probably going to rally into the actual addition. And the time will be, you know, the day or two after to actually short at that time and probably top out and sell off significantly afterwards. I mean, this market, again, like I said, is very simple. Go back to basic trading 101 strategies, rising stocks, rising above with the catalyst coming and stocks selling off afterwards. Sell on news, buy on rumors, sell on news, buy on before the catalyst, sell after the catalyst. I think that probably is going to hold with Tesla too. I don't want to be short Tesla right now because you still got wins the day, 21st, you said, I think.
Well, we don't know yet.
The
21st is when they're going to add it, but the question is, do they add stuff the week before or do they just add it all right on the 21st? So we don't know yet.
There's so many unknowns here, but I think the only thing I'm comfortable with saying is I think the stock goes higher. So I'd buy pullbacks on Tesla. If as trades, don't, I probably would sell it the day before. Don't get greedy, maybe the day before, but you probably, if you bought it here, you probably make money. I mean, anything can happen. The market could roll over, and that's why, you know, I always hedge. So I try to take out the market risk. So if I was buying Tesla, maybe I short twice as much QQQs because Tesla's got a high beta against it, just to try to, you know, eliminate the market risk out of it. But that's just me. A lot of you are only long only traders. If you're buying Tesla 498, do I think you make money in the next month? I do. That's just my opinion. I think it goes higher.
I'm just going to go. I'm not going to do anything and fundamental on this, but just look at the monthly down here and just look at 500. I mean, it's a big level. I mean, you got up above it yesterday. You got to 508.61. Have you posted a close over 500 here? Nope. 499.27. So I think to get that next leg, 515, 520, you know, that's a monthly chart there. So when's the last time you've had three monthly highs in, well, you don't know what, we still got a little time left in the month, but you know, if you're buying this right here, I wouldn't like risk down, I mean, to 360 or 460 or whatever, that's where it broke out from. But if you're buying it at 500, I'd probably, you know, if you want to look at it, risk reward, and I'm not doing this, I'd own Tesla.
A lot of risk.
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, I wouldn't, like, if it was 485, I'd be like, I'm wrong on this, right? You want to see it go to 530. So the monthlies are saying this is an important area, so we'll let the month finish out, see where that candle ends
up. I'll go with that, and maybe it does, maybe, you know, and then in this market, you don't have to chase. It'll probably give you another chance. Maybe there'll be a headline or something. Maybe it'll pull back to 470, 480, and then strike. So always buying the dip is better than buying the rip. You just had a 2-day rip in Tesla. It could just continue, but I'm always a fan of buying the dip. You got that dip the second day after, you know, they did the announcement where, you know, you obviously had the initial announcement trade up to 462. Well, even that day,
you had the dip.
That day, it pulled back significantly after making that high to 433. So you got a dip. Now it's just had a straight up run from like 440 to 500, 60 points in 2 days. Really with no dip. So I'd wait for a dip, but I think it still goes higher.
All right. S&Ps have backed off the pre-market high. Not much. 82.50, 82.75 was yesterday's high. So we have a clear target on the upside. I also have a weekly number coming in just above that. So I mentioned yesterday, you know, Fridays, you know, you get the extremes, close on the high and keep on going on Sunday night, or close on the low and keep on going. But that doesn't look like the scenario so far here as of 8:35 Eastern Standard Time.
Do you guys want to talk about Gilead or no? The WHO advised...
Dennis loves to hate.
Yeah. Well, that's why, you know, we don't have to, but the WHO advised against using remdesivir in all hospitalized patients, despite the fact that the FDA has approved
so many conflicting
headlines. I don't know who to believe here, but...
Just as it wasn't, you know, even when we were thinking Gilead was the savior drug and they kept selling the rallies, am I selling the dip on Gilead because the WHO don't believe in remdesivir? I don't believe in Gilead, just period. So I'm probably not buying the dip because I just hate the stock. But I think, you know, a buck's probably fair. I don't think this is going to roll over and lose $4 or $5 because the WHO, you know, is saying that the remdesivir doesn't work. If anything, it's been a leaders to laggards rally. If anything, I'd probably buy the dip on Gilead, but I just hate the stock and I hate the company. So that's why I'm not buying the dip. But I think if you're looking at buying the dip or selling the dip, I'm always leaning to buy the dip, even in Gilead, the dog of all dogs, the dog of the pharmaceutical companies. It's like the worst pharmaceutical company ever.
You talk
it seems
about...
like it anyways. Five years, $120 back in 2015. It's half of that. In 2016. So 5 years later, the stock has been halved. We know biotech in the last 5 years has not actually been a great place to be, but they're still overall, if you look at the XBI, it's up. So Biogen and Gilead, two dogs.
Yeah. Come on, Trent. This is a pretty steep down trend line. There you go. Well, it's
it
off.
It might be due for a little short squeeze.
You know, when you were talking about
this. I could get talked into buying it just for the fact that I think a lot of people are selling it today, and I think they're wrong.
And also, remember you talked about this one, like, whoo-hoo, when this puppy goes through 60, you know, it's going.
Short it to 50.
Yeah, and it goes to 58 and just bounces, you know. Yeah. And so.
Dividend protection.
Exactly. A little bit of dividend. But that's a pretty, I'm sure you get y'all can. Built a better steep down trend line than that, but if it busts out of that, but man, it just no, you know, the news flow hasn't been good since that thing popped up to 75-80 on the remdesivir. They need something, and they bought some companies. Do they have anything else in the pipeline? I mean, that's what's going to move this thing, right, Dennis? Is a new drug?
I know it's tough. It's been like a growth. They just can't find the growth, and they've tried. You know,
they
tried
bought a couple places
they have.
Too.
A couple times they've been trying to buy growth. They're trying to figure it out, but it's like the IBM of the biotech world. So we know the IBM has been trying to do the same thing in the tech world. They can't figure it out on their own, so they're trying to buy growth, and they buy Red Hat. They're trying different things. Well, it's still hated. And
how is,
you know,
IBM
even IBM
doing?
Every time it shows some life and think about, you know, oh, we're gonna do some financial engineering here back in October, and we're gonna, I don't even remember what it was back then.
Kerplunk.
They popped the thing from 125 to 135.
Spinning something
days.
Off.
Spin yeah, it
something.
Took 4 days to give it all back. So it Gilead, IBM, they're all kind of the same. They just hate it. I don't know what turns them around, but I don't see the catalyst to really, you know, just all of a sudden turn them around. So other than, you know, maybe they're just, you know, so oversold that they're due for a bounce, but hard to get on board just because of that.
I think they've been doing some commercials.
Can I ask?
Go ahead,
you can
Spence.
Ask anything you want. You run the show.
I have a trivia question. I have a trivia question. Do either of you remember the Four Horsemen of Biotech?
I asked this question a while ago. I do.
You remember the Four Horsemen of Biotech?
We'll go one. I'll give you the first one. Dell.
No, of biotech.
Oh, a biotech. Well, I would say
remember
Biogen
this?
For sure.
Yeah, that's one of them.
Celgene.
Yep, they're off the board now, but that was one of them.
Yeah, Bristol Myers.
I'll throw one
Greg
in there.
Them. What do you got?
Amgen.
That's one of them,
I was
going
to say Amgen. Who's the fourth, though?
It was Gilead.
Oh, yeah, obviously it was Gilead. Those
yeah.
Four horsemen didn't really do that great.
No,
whenever they Well, think about it. The only one that I guess Amgen's done the best of the Four Horsemen, but Celgene got bought out, but it was way low. It went down. I owned Celgene. I was so mad. It was like 145, and then it got bought out at like 90. So, and
oh, yeah, that was the stock I was thinking of that you did. You averaged down in that one, didn't you? Yeah, I know what you
I did. No, I averaged up. I was like, never
yes,
averaged
up.
I had Celgene at like
yep.
$25, and then I bought more at like 100. So
yes.
I thought I was going to continue to go, and I brought my cost base up to like 60, and I was like, holy crap. And then it went down to 60, and I was like, how did I just turn like a 400% winner into a loser? Well, I averaged up, so I guess you don't want to average up. We got Raz
Jason,
sneaking in here.
Jason is in our office. I didn't know that was allowed, but I guess he's the boss. He can do whatever he wants. Jason Raz, I think, is the founder and CEO.
Why wouldn't that be allowed? Nothing. They didn't change any of the rules. They just said if you can stay at home, you should stay home. It's the same thing it's been for the last 3 months.
Oh,
nothing changed.
So can I go back into the office?
Can I go back in?
And you know you won't get COVID from Raz. He's already had it, so he's close.
I know. And Dennis, our office fit like 65 people, and there's three people here: me, Luke, and Randy, and then my daughter and her friend. Because tonight is a TikTok night. We have the TikTok celebrities: Josh Griffin, Bryce Hall, and Griffin Johnson doing a call with us here at 8 o'clock. It's a whole thing. Wow. And Dennis, you're growing a beard. But okay, you're
trading too much and not taking care of personal hygiene.
I do gotta say something, guys. So if we could play the clip from 2 weeks ago. Remember me, you, and Joel, we talked about a Tesla. You guys were saying it was dead money. That it was just sitting there not moving. You guys are right, it wasn't. But I was at 390 and I bought calls and went long the stock. Yes, the S&P thing, I had no inside info they're gonna announce it. So I got lucky with that. But one of my guys, and here's where I came up with that call. My guy who got me into Tesla way back when it was $38, he made a bet with me. Listen to this. He made a bet with me that Tesla would hit 600 by like January or February, but 500 by the end of November. Okay. And we made this bet in September or October, September, end of September, beginning of October. And this was when Tesla was like dead money, wasn't moving at all. And so he has never been wrong when it comes to Tesla. He's never been wrong when it comes to Tesla in timing. And so I went with it. And so when we were on the show, Joel, like 2 weeks, you were like, Jason, I don't like the charts. It's just sitting there. It's not moving. There's no support here. There's nothing. But I went long. I bought like different month calls, November calls, December calls, January calls. He's been wrong by like weeks or months like that, but never wrong like within like a 4 month period.
Actually, it was in a consolidation period. And we talked about stocks resolve consolidations, either the upside or the downside. So
it sat there and did nothing for 2 months. So yeah, definitely the S&P catalyst. We're on board now.
It's Dennis. I'm not like saying you guys are wrong. I'm not doing one of those. I'm saying it was not doing anything. I made the bet with him, guys, because either way, if it went up, then I was happy to win. I made the bet with him to see how confident he was on that move. And so once I realized how confident he was, I'm like, all right, I'm buying more stock. So I bought more stock, and then for 6 weeks, it didn't do anything. So I can read you the text messages. I'm like, is the bet still on? Are you still going to hear? I mean, this is how confident this guy is. I mean, and I tried to bring on the show, but he really doesn't like media.
Wait, quick question. Here you go. Quick question. This is a different guy than the other bet, right? I just want to clarify.
Yeah.
The other guy's a bear. This guy's the Tesla bull, this other guy.
Yeah, and this guy is a very political guy too. So hold on. So he
what does he think about all these other EV stocks? You know, the NEOs.
Joel, that's a great freaking question. He's the guy. The reason I didn't get in WKHS because he like didn't know about it, and I just I would ever listen to him. But our bet was like 600. But oh my god, this guy can talk. By the way, he just if you get a conversation, he'll tell you everything you want to know. Another, you think I talk a lot, guys? Nope, this guy kills me. But so that's why I got into it when it was doing nothing. You're right, it was in consolidation, wasn't moving, Dennis. But he was so confident. All right, here he goes.
I wanted to stop you for a second and then let you go. But you're doing something correct there. You strike when stocks are in consolidation. You make your opinion. You weren't chasing. I always say, you know, when it's consolidation station, the train hasn't left the station. So place your bets. So you struck at the right time. You're placing your bets when it's in consolidation. You're not chasing it up after 100 points. Because a lot of people, what they do wrong, stock move 100 points, they're like, I got to get on this. This train's moving. And then the train stops or starts going the other way and they get run over. So you did something absolutely correct. You were striking when a stock was in consolidation. And I love that.
Okay. And I did it because I was listening to him. I said, so the stock was at, here we go. So here is the thing. Okay. If you're happy to turn, sell it October 16th. All right. He said, Tesla is going to run. Questions are, when is the S&P 500 announcement? I actually never read this part, guys. when is the S&P 5? So this is, he said, Tesla's going to hit 600. He goes, the questions are, when is Tesla, the S&P 500 announcement? When is the official inclusion? How much money is Tesla raising after Battery Day? So this was before Battery Day. Then Battery Day and whatever, it, you know, didn't have anything to do, whatever. And then he sent me the video of 1999 video with Jeff Bezos, where the 60 Minutes did the interview, and it's like about Amazon, it was .com, and it was this thing, and he was comparing to that. Wait, I'll go to the rest of this, but I know we have Josh Brown coming up in a minute, but let me just go. Here you go. Okay, so I go, so what's our bet? He goes, we stay above 375, you know, in August and September, we'll go to 600 by November. And so that was the original bet, and I said, let's bet that. And then So now I moved that to January. If it hits 600, what do I win? If it does not, what do you win? So this was the day we made this bet. It was at 375.88. And then that's when I, you know, he's telling me to buy call spreads and look at butterflies and stuff like that. And so then he went through the whole reason why it's going to go to 600. And it's, you know, he goes, and just to reiterate, 600 by Thanksgiving, which it's not going to be 600. It'll be 500 or whatever, but, or maybe it can go.
You never know in this market, Jason. Could it make 100 points here in 3 days? You never know.
All right. Yeah. I am going to bring on our guest now, downtown Josh Brown. He's the reform broker. He's the CEO of Ritholtz Wealth Management. He's a CNBC contributor. And he's also the author of a new book, which is one of the reasons we wanted to have him on today. Josh, you're here. Welcome.
What's up, Go? So,
Josh, where's the new book behind you? Like, we need to see the new book. Let's hold it up. Let's dance it.
There. It's behind it. You could see it. It's next to Baby Yoda.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And your Shinola clock. Where's your Shinola clock?
Jason, you didn't tell me how good this show was. You guys are awesome. Like, No. Because I didn't even know Jason is doing this show, and he's never invited me on before. But
You've been on before.
You guys are like talking about the stuff that, like, I talk about. Like with, I'm definitely listening to this from now on. You should do some stuff on the Lions too.
Yeah, right. Like, oh.
I don't think
Lions
are
fun to talk about, Josh.
I just come on Fridays at 8:45, Josh.
This is great, I love this. Yeah. All right, so first of all,
there's like 10,000 people in the chat room right now, just like talking the stuff as we're on.
All right, awesome. So first of all, show of hands, melt up into year end or no? Give me a show of hands for the melt up. I gotta be honest. That's what I think.
I'm with you, Josh.
I hate saying it out loud because if it doesn't happen, you know, but I'm starting to think that way. I don't know.
I think so, too. Like I was just saying earlier on the show, I'm like, the market's got like the blinders on right now, and it's just looking at the vaccine blinders. We locked Chicago down. That's okay. We got the vaccine. We locked California down. That's okay. We got the vaccine. I mean, I'm kind of on the board on these reopening stocks right now. What are your thoughts there?
Hold on. Press one for melt up. Press two for not a melt up. Okay. Because they can't all raise their hands.
I'm pushing my one in.
I mean, I own like Starbucks, Simon Property Group.
Do you still own Slack?
No. I took an L on Slack a while ago. But I'm in some companies that really need there to be a reopening to get back to like their 2019 numbers, and it might take them 2 years to do it. But I think about when the coronavirus, and you guys had it bad like we did at the same time, right? New York, Detroit, Michigan. So
Dennis is in Canada, by the way.
Okay.
I moved way far north just to get away from Corona.
Canada handled it slightly better than us. But do you remember the first time you heard of someone you knew that had COVID-19?
Yeah,
it was Jason Rasnick.
Still, it was actual.
Somebody close. Like I knew other people, but I was like, my boss. It was my boss.
Wait a minute. And Rasnick never shuts the fuck up. So you know he was a super spreader.
Knew that was coming. I knew. Yeah. Right. Hey, Josh, real quick before
and a close talker. Hold on, Joel. And a close talker. So anyway, I was going to ask. The first couple of people you heard of in your real life, not Tom Hanks, but like people you know that got it. Now reverse that. The first person you hear of that you know that gets the vaccine and they're like, yeah, I'm going to the movies. Fuck you. I'll do whatever I want now. Right? Like that's, I think, come January, the first people that you know are going to start to say, yeah, I got vaccinated. I feel great. Everything's fine. I'm going to go live my life now. That's going to, I think, people are starting to think that way. Not everyone, because it's still bad and we're still in danger, but like that's what I'm starting to plan for.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. Like I think there's going to be, you know, next year, we've all been cooped up. I think there's going to be a run, like, and you were saying this last week too, Jason, like, you know, I want to go on a cruise. I get vaccinated. I want to go to Disney World. Take my kids to Disney. I want to start doing stuff. I've been cooped up for the last 6-7 months. There could be a run on to spend money here coming up.
The biggest wildest Benzinga FinTech Awards on the roof of the, you know, the Black Eyed Peas come play, whatever you want, you know? Come on. That's what we'll do. So wait, Josh, how
the
I invest
Black
my
Eyed Peas.
I don't know. It's the thing only thing I can think of, dude.
It's 2020. Can you get me chainsmokers?
Chainsmokers. Yeah, that's a good point. Josh, your book, what made you decide to write How I Invest My Money? And by the way, if you're listening to this show right now, we're going to give two autographed, maybe personalized books from Josh himself. So we're going to do some sort of contest in a minute for that. So don't go away. But Josh, what made you write this book, How I Invest My Money? Number one seller, number one bestseller. I'm looking at it right now with a little graphic on Amazon. That is badass, man. And if I could tell you guys where I met Josh Brown and what he was doing at the time, but I don't know if I want him, if he wants me to do that. But I mean, can I say something?
What was I doing?
What do you mean? You don't remember?
No.
I mean, okay.
I don't remember meeting you for the first. No.
I remember. We were outside.
Did we have a meet cute?
it was one of those truck stops, you know, where there's a little hole. No. No. It was outside. Pizza. Right. Hold on. Let me finish. It was outside this pizza place where they we met there. He's just sitting there. You weren't working at the time. You went, then you flew to California and met Barry Ritholtz. And you like didn't have I'm giving the story like Josh didn't come out rich. Like he wasn't like this rich guy, successful guy. He didn't have a Twitter following, nothing. And he went to San Diego with like no money, literally no money, borrowed money from his, I don't know if I can say this.
Wait, so did I meet you in San Diego?
No, you met me before. We were outside that pizza place. There was a Stock Twits party and you were outside and we were on the bench just like hanging there talking. That's right. Where we met.
Well, you and I have friends in common because you went to the University of Michigan. So did my wife.
Yes, that's exactly right.
So at the time you and I met, I basically was leaving the retail brokerage business, but I didn't know where to go. Like I knew I wanted to be an investment advisor instead of a broker, but I like had no firm to go to. I think I was interviewing at LPL, but they were like, you don't have enough money under management. So we're not interested. Like I was literally that's the situation I was in. I was totally broke.
But tell them about how you had to get money to go. Go ahead. Like share a little bit of that.
I think I borrowed money from either my dad or my father-in-law. And they were basically like, you got to go out there because this thing that you have going on with the blog is like the only good thing you have happening. So you got to go meet these other financial bloggers and see what's going on. And I met Barry and the rest is history. But I think
you're just going to skip all over that. Barry had the huge blog at the time. There, Josh is just sitting at the pool, met this guy. You didn't have you didn't have money or pot to piss in. And then all of a sudden blows up and now got the reform broker. All right. I'll stop on that. Okay. What made you write this book?
That's my money. Child support payments mostly. Huh. No, I really didn't plan on writing a book. I wrote a blog post that went viral about how I invest my own money. And nobody really in our industry does that. Like nobody, it's amazing. Like when you see somebody like me in the media, I'm always talking about what other people should do. And no one's ever been like, well, what do you do? Like, where's your own money? So I wrote a blog post about it. And a lot of people were like, wow, that's so weird. I've never heard a financial advisor talk about their own portfolio. So Brian Portnoy reached out. He's a great author and behavioral investing expert. And he's just like, we got to do this as a book. We'll go to like 25 of our friends who are good writers and work in the industry, and we'll get them to be transparent about how they invest. So that's what we did. It's not a book like how to beat the market or whatever. It's a book about personal finance. It's a book about the idea that there is no right portfolio for everybody. So when you read through these chapters, and we have some amazing contributors like Morgan Housel, Christine Benz from Morningstar, Cheryl Penny from Dynasty, well-known people in our industry. No two portfolios are alike. And the reason is that they're all investing for different things. Their lives are very different. And so that's what we were trying to do with the book, and it came out really well. So I'm very lucky to have the contributors that I had.
Yeah, and now – Spencer, we want to figure out. We're going to give two.
I had a question I wanted to ask. Did anyone? Oh. So you got contributions from 25, I believe, advisors, right? I guess how did you know that was enough? And did anyone reach out and be like, "Well, why didn't you ask me?"
You know what? We have room to do a volume two. We almost everybody said yes, which I was really surprised.
Who said no? Just kidding.
I had a couple of people say no for compliance reasons. They wanted to do it. Their firms wouldn't let them. Which that's – look, when you have people that work in our industry, they have like strictures. They can't just do whatever they feel like doing. So we had certain people that were like, I would love to do a chapter, but I'm not allowed. All right. It happens.
Can I read, Spencer, a couple of questions from the chat for Josh real quick?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Maybe a little rapid fire. Maybe not, yeah. Josh. One of the questions, Josh, they said, what happened to your show you had on CNBC on Friday evenings or something?
We were doing this thing called Summer School because Jimmy Cramer was taking long weekends in the summer. And if you see how hard Jimmy works, nobody deserves a long weekend that like he does. So he was taking Fridays off. So they had this extra slot where Mad Money would normally be. So they allowed Frank Holland and I to do a show for young investors where we get to take questions, talk personal finance, talk stocks. And I had so much fun doing it. And I don't know if Cramer wants to maybe take Fridays off next summer, I'll come back and do it. But it was a lot of fun. And I really enjoyed doing it and mixing it up with the kids. And I loved it. But the summer ended, I guess, is the answer to that question.
Before we go to the chat questions, Josh, I have a question for you. We're on with Josh Brown, CNBC contributor, author. You mentioned something at the top here in Slack that very few people do on Wall Street. And you said you took an L. You took a loss in something. And that's what we talk about a lot on the show, not only the winners, but taking a loss. Was it something, you know, fundamental? Did something change fundamental? Or is it something technical or just a stop loss being hit? What's your trigger on the downside to exit a losing trade?
So in the case of Slack, I don't think I was down much. I bought it right when it came public and it had struggled every single day since. And I think one of the things I didn't count on was how much pressure Microsoft was going to be putting on Slack, almost as though they timed that pressure for the company's IPO. The worst thing that could have happened in Microsoft's eyes was this thing turns into a $40 billion company on the public markets. So there's another thing, though, that I didn't count on that I guess I got wrong. And this applies to all direct listing stocks. The trade-off for a regular way IPO versus a direct listing. So Snowflake is a regular way IPO. Slack, Spotify, there are a handful of others, high-profile companies were direct listings. In an IPO, the insiders have to hold on to their stock. They have a lockup period. And the lockup period expires. Sometimes they stagger it. There are two separate expirations. But employees and executives, they can't just get liquid on day one. They have to hold. And that sometimes can help keep the float small and provide support for the share price in the early going. Company usually has 2 quarters, 3 quarters to report results before there are any large blocks for sale from the insiders. Okay. In a direct listing, They basically say, okay, here's the trade-off. We're just going to list this right here at this price, and everyone's liquid day one. So there was no underwriter, right? So the Wall Street banks didn't do any work for them. So they say, well, we could sell whenever we want. We're not obligated. We don't have to make any promises to anyone because they're not going public to raise money. They've already raised the money. They're specifically going public to provide liquidity for people who have already invested, the venture capitalists, So with Slack, two problems with going public that way. The first is they don't have any champions. If Morgan Stanley and JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs and Bank of America didn't serve as your underwriter and sell this to all their clients, they're not incentivized to come out 30 days after the IPO and give you a strong buy. So Slack never really got that institutional support from the street because they didn't pay anybody enough money. That's the problem. The second problem, though, is people were liquid to sell immediately. So I think that that definitely had an impact on the lack of momentum. So I didn't count on those things. It escaped me how important that they might have been. And then Microsoft really looks at this company coming public and loads up the rifle and just continues firing shots at them, making announcements, making partnerships. They want to just kill this thing in the cradle. So that's what's gone on with Slack. And after, I guess, 2 quarters of watching that, I just said, you know what? I'm making so much money in all these other names. It should not be so hard. I don't want to have a struggling stock. I can always come back to it. So I took a loss and moved on, and I probably allocated to something that did better. So,
okay. Now this may get your wife mad at me because I'm going to make
Don't do it.
Well, I'm going to make your ego.
Totally, she's totally watching this, by the way. So
she's not. I mean, she should. No. It's hard to go to YouTube/Benzinga if you watch it, but this could get your head bigger. So did you not think there would be as much demand for your and Portnoy's words? The people in the chat are going crazy. I just tried to order the book. It says, I'll read it to you. Adam Blanc ships in 1 to 2 months. Can we get expedited shipping from Benzinga? LOL.
Don't go by that. It's not real. Let me explain to you what's going on. So the publisher is Harriman House. Very, very, very nice people, British. Very nice, yeah. They know what they're doing. Global publisher. The way they explain it is they print the copies, they hold them in their own warehouse, and they have to rely on Amazon to come get them. Not just my book, every book. This is how it works. Amazon, because of the pandemic, literally does not have enough people, enough trucks to make all these runs to all these warehouses in a timely fashion. They're just as stretched as everybody else. They're hiring 100,000 people this year, Amazon. Not just for this, but they are as stretched logistically as they've ever been. So they're putting up this blanket message 1 to 2 months, but it literally could be a week. It's just a function of when the Amazon trucks get to Harriman House's warehouse, pick up the books. The books are printed. We did a 10,000 copy first run, and then they just added another 15,000 copies to that, and they're working on printing more. So the books will come sooner than 2 months, but Amazon doesn't put a specific date anymore because they can't guarantee when the books will arrive from the warehouse.
So you heard it from the horse's mouth. This is good.
They have to come get it.
Wait, this is good. Two quick questions. One, is it on Audible? And two, where else can they buy the book? If not,
so the Audible version comes out very soon. Same thing. They're getting slammed with all these submissions of audio files to put up on Audible for all these books, but they have quality control at Amazon. Like, you can't just record something and then send it to them and say, post this. They listen to every single Audible book before they'll allow it to be in the store. But ours is very high quality. It'll make it through. We're just waiting for them to vet it on Amazon. But we hired two actors, a male actor and a female actor, to read each chapter because we have all these contributors. I couldn't read all their.
Okay. Wait, now, someone in the chat just asked this, but I'm going to pretend Joel asked it. Joel wants to know, is there a picture book version?
Well, it's funny you should ask because it is a picture book. Do you guys know who Carl Richards is?
Yes. No,
Behavior Gap? Okay.
Yes, I do. I do the blog.
You've seen these drawings before?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is, that's pretty sweet. Right. So
check this out. Wait. Every single chapter has a custom illustration by Carl Richards. Carl Richards does a column for the New York Times for the last 10 years. Yep. Every week he does one of these. He's been doing these sketches since 2010. And let me show you. So like this is Cheryl Penny. Cheryl is the founder of Dynasty, which is a platform for RIA firms. He's got like $50 billion on his platform. He's a wildebeest, this guy. So his chapter is about how he thinks about money in terms of buckets, like what he's using the money for. So Carl read every chapter and did a custom illustration for our book. So it is a picture book, I guess is the right way to put it. And each chapter is like 4 pages or 5 pages. So we didn't want to give people like so much on each person. We wanted to give them a lot of different people. So we kept the chapters really short and we have a picture for each one.
Okay. All right. You guys don't even know, like, we're only on with Josh for a little bit. Josh is, we're going to do like a comedy show with the guy. Cause we do these FinTech awards and he makes fun of me every year. It's my bar mitzvah. And he just is quick to rip on and have these things. But it's too early for all that. Josh, they want to know if there's any, I mean, you don't have to give a stock because this is not what it's about, but are there any like companies you're watching right now that interest you, or is it that reopening plays that you're looking at? And, you know, is it Roost Chris? I don't know. If you don't have one, don't worry about it.
I talk about my portfolio all the time. It's so the stock that I've been most excited about recently is General Motors, which hometown favorite for you guys.
People have been saying it's like a value stock. It's cheap for like 12 years, but I'm not interested in that. I don't want to buy something just because it's cheap, because I think markets are pretty efficient. And my attitude is that it's cheap for a reason. There's a reason nobody wants to be in this stock, but I look for technical breakouts, or I look for exhaustion of sellers. I look for things that tell me that something may have changed, not something fundamental with the company, but something about the way investors are thinking about the company. So I put on some GM about a month ago as the momentum started to get ramped up, and it's been breaking out. And I think 43 is the high from late 2017. If you guys remember the economic and market environment in 2017, first of all, stocks went up every single day. US stocks went up every single day, but international stocks too. And we had this meme in the markets that everybody was repeating, which was global synchronized recovery or global synchronized expansion. We had economic growth all over the world in 2017. And that's the environment that a company like GM really needs. And so I think with all the stimulus and now the vaccines and economies reopening all over the world, we could have a similar year in 21 that we did in 17. And this is the type of stock that I think can work, not only because of global growth, but because of what they're doing to transform the company. They're going from a combustion engine giant to an electric giant. It looks like they want to get this done like overnight. They keep announcing more and more investment in next generation stuff. So you look at that, you look at the valuation that Uber and Lyft have on the open market, and you think about what the potential for Cruise might be. And then Cruise going into San Francisco this December, the first autonomous taxi service in any major city in the country. They're getting this done before Google. They're getting this done before Tesla. And I don't think the share price has gotten enough credit for that. So there's a lot happening at GM that seems to be really exciting. They sold out of the first run of the Hummers. They're already taking orders for the second run. So I think the stock's starting to get credit for these things. And I think that's where the momentum comes from. So that's the way I think about like individual stocks in my portfolio.
Dennis, what do you say to that?
I've been saying GM and Ford. I've been on this train for a bit. I think I'm all about story. And, you know, I'm like, where is the story going to be? And the story turned. And Josh is right. The sentiment towards the stock has turned for a reason, because this is all of a sudden isn't, you know, just about gas, you know, guzzling trucks and cars. Ford as well. This is now an electric car story to a certain extent, or starting to be viewed that way. And if the market starts to view it that way as an EV story, and for Ford as well, I think the stocks go higher over the next year. I'm on the Ford because I love GM the F-150. Spun off, go ahead.
John, if GM spun off autonomous and electric, like bundled those two, they're not going to, because they seem to want to just turn the whole company into that. But if that was a standalone, if Cruise was a standalone company, or electric vehicles and Cruise, what would the valuation be on the street? It could be 20 billion, right? 30 billion. Look at the way they're valuing all the other EV companies.
GM, NIO, Josh, to your point, NIO is worth more than GM right now. Does that make any sense that NIO is worth more than GM?
No.
All right.
No. And I'm not even going to use the T word, but that's a $450 billion company that just got added to the S&P, the largest company ever to be added to the S&P for the first time. So if GM were viewed more like that, so I'm not saying that multiple is justified, but like, I think the gap should close between the two, and maybe one is too expensive, but one is probably too cheap. And it takes time for the street to come to that realization, but that's why you use technicals, because you wait for that moment when you see people starting to pick up on that. You don't want to be waiting for that to happen.
Joel, that's the music to your ears. Joel loves.
What's your favorite technical? You talk about breakout. You're looking on the daily, weekly, monthlies. We're pretty simple here with what we look at. Do you have any favorite technical patterns?
I only care about weekly closing prices.
Nice.
Because I'm not an intraday guy. So what I'm looking for is reasonable RSI, something between 50 and 70 for an entry, for an entry, something between 50 and 70. And I want stocks at or near weekly closing highs. And I really, really, really love bases. Big, 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 fat, juicy bases. And that's what you have in GM. And when I find a base that's multiple years and a stock getting toward the upper end of that, and then I read about the company and I see that there's been some shift in the fundamentals that is a reason to just, let me show you something. Pull up Gap Stores, GPS.
Sure.
I'm not in this yet because I'm an idiot. I saw this happening.
But you wear all Gap clothes.
Clearly. I'm not in this yet because which one are we looking at? Which
pain? I just put, yeah, GPS is coming up in a second.
All right. So let's focus on this one on the top right. Okay. First of all, you could draw a very perfect diagonal line along the lows. And you see that this is just a beautiful higher lows situation since the summer, right? In that top pain.
Okay. Okay. How far back do you want to go for those lows? I mean, you got three lows right here.
I think he's looking long term. He's looking at that trend. You can see the very clear uptrend here.
Yep.
So what you want to think about now is, so now you have a stock that this sells at 0.5 times sales. Lululemon sells at 11 times sales. They do the same thing. What is behind that disparity? Well, Lulu has done an incredible job capturing a customer base that continues to order all the time, loves their app, loves the store, loves the omnichannel experience, and they make a lot of money on the stuff they sell, great margins. It's actually one of the only apparel retailers that you can say anything good about. Gap Stores has 60 million customers buying their stuff every month. There are very few companies with 60 million active customers. All they have to do is change the narrative on the street about are they customers or are they users? If they call them users, you'd get a valuation boost right away. Lululemon has been able to do that. The woman who now runs Gap Stores was running Old Navy and turned it into a monster. And they were, before the pandemic, about to spin Old Navy off. That was the plan.
Yep.
And they were going to unlock shareholder. The pandemic hit and they said, her name is Sonia Singhal. They said, wait a minute, we're not spinning off Old Navy. You are taking over the whole thing. You're the CEO now. She made her the CEO on March 23rd, literally with the stock market down 40%.
Wow.
That's the bottom of the market. So they said, you're in charge. She is crushing it. She is crushing it. Okay. Wow. So what's happening with this stock? You had this really, really long period where it did absolutely nothing. Right? Years and years and years and years. No progress, no momentum, nothing good to talk about in the story. So you've got this fundamental change now and them getting better in omnichannel, them getting better at the app, them improving the quality of the clothing and taking on Lulu. And this could become a growth stock and it's selling at 0.5 times sales. So you don't even have to pay up for the privilege of making that bet. You're basically... you're buying a dirt cheap stock where good things are starting to happen, but the street is only now realizing it. So you see 8 straight months of this stock starting to move up. And I think it's very, very early in that story. So I'm not in it yet, but that's like an example of the way I marry technicals and fundamentals to try to find interesting things to be involved with.
All right. Great answer. Now it's 9:15. So Josh has to run. We I want to see Josh talk about GM, Gap. We had a bunch of other stuff. We got to bring you on more often. I mean, the chat is going crazy.
What are you guys doing tomorrow?
See,
we'll come on for you, Josh. You want to do it? We'll do it. All right, Josh, come on. I'll work Saturday.
Guys, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Josh, you can't go yet. We're doing the contest. Oh. Yeah. Okay. So we're giving two books away, signed by Josh. And I do want to give the book away. There's this guy in the group, in the chat. His name is Josh B. That's his chat name. He should get a book, but we can't do it that way. Here is the first question. So
well,
there's
only one question, I thought.
You're right. There's two signed copies, though.
There's only one question.
Maybe the second is the one who has the most interesting tweet that I see with hashtag Benzinger or something. But go ahead to the first question, Spencer. Okay, well, take it away.
The only question. The first two people that can email the correct answer to jason@benzinger.com will get two signed copies.
That's
the question. The question is,
Josh Brown was in Billions. He made a guest appearance in Billions.
No, not just what? A guest appearance. He was like a recurring. He's like the main character.
Yeah, right. No. What did he cameoed as a consultant, right? What
as myself.
As himself.
Right. But you were advising. Anyway, what did Josh Brown talk about on Billions? That's the question. What did Josh Brown talk about
on his first appearance?
His first appearance on Billions. Email jason@benzinga.com. The first two people will get signed copies of How I Invest My Money. Finance experts reveal how they save, spend, and invest by Josh Brown. Josh, we appreciate your time today. Thanks a lot.
Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate you having me on, and I would love to come back sometime. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, guys. Thank
great
you.
Insight, Josh. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
So, by the way, Josh, Joel talked about Gap. And when I was in college, I used to love Gap because the old CEO, he was like one of these like celebrity CEOs. Does the chat know who the old CEO celebrity was? Do they remember who it was? I just wanted to ask that. Starts with the first name, starts with an M, and his last name starts with a D. And I used to love this guy all day.
No.
Mickey Drexler. When I say I had a man crush, Dennis, I had a man crush with this guy. I had his picture on my wall in my dorm room. From a Forbes magazine, okay? And I still have – no, my wife threw away the magazines. I'm so annoyed. I had a collection of
– She was jealous.
She was jealous. I'm putting Mickey Drexler on the wall. And by the way, then he went to, like, J. Crew and, like, all fumbled and it all was bad. But I, like – this is where I would, like, I mean, I still do glorify these leaders sometimes, but I would really glorify them and, like, think they, like, you know, put on their clothes differently than we do. And so I'd be really intimidated and put that stuff on the wall. But, yeah, it was Mickey Drexler. That was it. So what did you guys think of Josh?
That was great. That was fantastic. Insight.
Took some notes.
It's funny. He was on the show like 5 years ago, but he didn't remember. We were just small time then.
Yeah. I know. You like told him. I'm like, oh, he doesn't.
And you're on.
Joel, what was I going to say? When you asked your technical question, I thought it was a great question because he had some really good answers to it. And he he owns his losses. He owns his gains. And honestly, guys, he's one of the funnier guys. There's like a 10-minute edition of him, like he's done our FinTech Awards for 6 years, and there's like a five, like he has these renditions that are just so funny. When we get another video editor, we should just do like a comedy thing of it, but we should have him more often. We should do once a month, or I don't know, whatever, we'll figure it out. But
whatever he wants.
Oh, and by the way, I meant to say on the damn show, I forgot to say because I wanted Joshua, I bought like 30 of his books, so we're gonna give away a lot more, but just these are gonna be some signed ones. Great. We have five copies. And then before you hang up, Spencer, if you tweet out, I don't know, or do we have a hashtag, or just hashtag Benzinga and like just say how much you love Joel, Dennis, and Spencer or Pre-Market Prep, I'll search for someone on Twitter if they do like at Benzinga. If you do at Benzinga so I see it, I'll give another book away to someone who does at Benzinga and talk about how much you love the show or something, or the YouTube, or give a link to the YouTube.
Okay.
Spencer, just because you took the day off, don't get mad at Joel and Dennis and I. We're trying to work, okay? I mean, Joel's working his ass off. He has his Michigan shirt on. I mean, that takes some balls to wear that today, okay? I mean, come on. All right? All right. I'll see you guys later. I love you. Is Michigan playing this weekend?
Yeah, at Rutgers. Take the
points. Oh, my God. We're going to get destroyed. All right.
Take the points.
Guys, I spent 2 hours with Dave Portnoy on Wednesday, 2 hours. I got everything and anything. I will be bringing some of the unveilings here to the show
next week.
It's good stuff. Yeah. Next week, because Spencer is about to go crazy. He wants to hang up so bad. It's unbelievable. I can't even believe this.
Expiration.
It's options expiration.
I'm like panicking. We're getting close here.
All right, Jason's gone.
I gotta
we're
go
gone.
Too. I'm leaving too. It's option expiration.
We're all leaving.
Guys.
We're all leaving. Joel, what do you want to say?
I just want to say keep an eye on that pre-market high that's right there with yesterday's high. It's 82.75. That's the key to hitting 3,600 today. I'm out. Great show. Jason, thanks for bringing Josh on. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'll just sign off and say everyone hit that like button. We appreciate it. Please remember that all the information from our show is meant to be used as informational purposes, not for investing or trading advice. I need a nap too. Everyone have a good rest of your day. We'll be on with you at 3:40 p.m. Eastern Time.